Exodus chapter 5, verses 6 to 19. That same day Pharaoh gave this order to the slave drivers and foremen in charge of the people. You are no longer to supply the people with straw for making bricks. Let them go and gather their own straw, but require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce the quota. They're lazy. That's why they're crying out, "Let's go and sacrifice to our God." Make the work harder for the men, so that they keep working and pay no attention to lies and so on. As a direct consequence of Moses and Aaron attempting to get Israel released, as a direct consequence of their address to Pharaoh, that same day, Pharaoh responded by tightening the screw. The same number of bricks, he demands, but no straw. You're lazy, false accusation. I don't believe the claims about worship. It's all an excuse. We'll stop you listening to this tittle-tattle, this sentimental gush. We'll stop this kind of preaching and teaching. Get back to your work. And they beat the Israelites into submission. And when the Israelite foreman had to appear before Pharaoh's slave drivers and couldn't meet the quota of bricks, of course they couldn't. They were beaten, abused. What do we see here? Pharaoh responding by dismissing all this as idle nonsense. And he makes Israel's lot a bitter, hard experience. He, as I say, tightens the screw. He drives them into more and more despair. These delusions you're listening to, this sentimental talk, this seditious talk, these schemes, these lies that these men are giving you. No reduction in the work. But you have to produce the same number of bricks. Now in chapter 1, verses 13 to 14, we read that Israel's lot was heavy and bitter and sad. And they cried out in their groanings and moanings and losses and sorrows. But now, God has sent Moses and Aaron to deliver Israel. And is this the way that things are going to unfold? Now let me pause a moment. There's a problem for us, isn't there? Can you see the problem? The problem is that we know the last chapter. We've read the story. You have, haven't you? So you know what happens. It all turns out deliciously well, wonderfully well. Israel is triumphant at the Red Sea. Egypt is drowned. Pharaoh comes to a terribly sticky end. Oh, yes, it's all wonderful. But my friend, that's a trouble for us. That's a difficulty for us. You see, if only we had come to this account with new eyes, not knowing the end from the beginning. If only we could appreciate how hard it goes at the very beginning. Here is Moses and Aaron coming with all these wonderful tales, as it might seem now. God has spoken to us. God has spoken to me, says Moses. You're going to be delivered. It's going to be wonderful. But this is the way the Lord takes. Immediately Moses begins. Things fall to pieces. They talk about going pear-shaped today. This is the pear shape of all pear shapes. Is this the way God works? As I say, we're spoiled because we know the last chapter. Even worse, we're spoiled because to us it's just reading it in a book. Put yourself in the boots of a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman now. Yesterday Moses told you these wonderful things. Your heart rose in expectation. But Psalm 13, hope deferred, makes the heart sick. Your bitterness now. You've got to make the same number of bricks, but no straw. How can you do this? How can you meet this quota? How can you meet this tally? How can you get this number of bricks ready? Is this the way God takes? Is this man really come from God? John Newton found the same, you know. Do you know his hymn? I asked the Lord that I might grow in faith and love and every grace. I wanted to be a more spiritual man. I wanted to be a better Christian. I wanted to be more holy, more Christ-like. So I prayed, Lord, give me this. I thought, he said in his hymn, I thought the Lord would appear and sort of wave his hand, and all of a sudden I would be a more holy man and be a more gracious man, a more Christ-like man. But it wasn't that way. And in his hymn he traces it out. God pursued him and broke him, and he lost things. He suffered. He said, is this the way that God makes a man holy? Yes, says God, it is. I remember many years ago, I had a headmistress when I was a schoolmaster. And she said to me once, praying is a dangerous occupation. You pray for patience, she says. And how does God give you patience? You go to Woolworths, do you, and you buy it? No, you can't go down to Boots, the chemist, or Walmart, or whatever it is, and I'll have a lump of patience, please, and take it home in a nice bag and a packet. God teaches you patience, of course, by sending things into your life to make you impatient. He teaches humility by sending things which naturally would make us proud. You see, God works by contraries. Joseph Hart put it in a hymn, how strange is the course a Christian must steer. Everything goes wrong when it's going right. Cowper put it this way, God moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. It is the mystery of providence. John Flavel was right, at least with his title. It is a mystery. He's right in his doctrine too, I think. God's secret counsel was to provoke Egypt to resist the Hebrews, to resist God. And in so doing, God would smash Pharaoh and Egypt and bring about the next stage in covenant history of redemption. There is a direct connection, though, between the hardening of Egypt's attitude and the worsening of Israel's condition and the bringing out of God's purpose. The preaching has provoked this. God is showing his power. He's making a name for himself. He's glorifying himself. He's raising a lasting testimony here. He's teaching generations of saints patience, prayer. That prayer is not always answered at once. God doesn't take the obvious way. There is no easy solution to these problems, and yet God is working out his eternal purpose step by step, remorselessly, powerfully. And he triumphs in the end. And the unbeliever has to learn too. Any unbeliever listening to me, are you listening to me, an unbeliever? You may smile today. You may laugh today. You may think it's all going your way. You may think you've got rid of God in your life. You've got rid of all these consequences. You haven't. You haven't. God is still master. God is still sovereign. Pharaoh here is riding high. Hebrews are down at the pit. But this is only the next stage in the process. God is leading up to the final triumph. God does make a name for himself here. Pharaoh hardens himself, and he is hardened, and he is destroyed, and he is destroying Egypt. And the Hebrews, in their sadness, in their grief, in the deferment of their hope, their hearts being made sick, Moses and Aaron must be wondering what's going on here. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, Blind unbelief is sure to err and scan his works in vain. God is his own interpreter, and he will make it plain. So said Cowper. My brother, my sister, are you passing through difficulties today? You're trying to obey God. You've done what you thought he was saying to you in his word. The Spirit has prompted you to a certain course of action, and you seem to be failing. There is your success, my friend. You seem to have sadness. There is your happiness. Night seemed to be closing in. It's day coming, my friend. God is working his purpose out. Do not judge the Lord by events. Do not judge the Lord by these circumstances. God often takes a circuitous route to bring the direct end. You would have thought, wouldn't you, that that same day Pharaoh would have been broken and Israel would have gone. But no. It has to be through the Exodus, through the Passover, through the destroyer, the angel, through the Red Sea, into the wilderness of sin, and then to Sinai. God knows his way. God knows his purpose. God knows his mind. Let us learn from this, brother and sister. And let us go on patiently trusting the Lord, not walking by sight, but walking by faith. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7, I think. An unbeliever. Do not make the mistake of thinking because all things are falling into your lap at the moment that all is going well for time and for eternity. Don't you make the mistake of judging by circumstances. Look to God in his word. He is sovereign, and his purpose and his decrees will stand. It is appointed unto men once to die, and that is you. And after this, the judgment. And however, at the moment, it doesn't look like that. I would say with the prophet Amos, prepare to meet your God, for you will have to meet him. Don't meet him in judgment, but meet him by trusting Christ now, and meet him in salvation and everlasting glory in Jesus. That is what I learn from these events so long ago in far-off Egypt. Things were going all astray for the Hebrews, but they weren't. God was moving inexorably to the final stage when he would glorify his name in the destruction of the Egyptians and the establishment of the Hebrews as the people of God, the nation of Israel, for that time in that covenant. May God be glorified as we contemplate these things and meditate upon them and apply them to our lives today. Amen.